ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm in the park with six of my friends. We're having a hopping race. It's my birthday party. I'm 10 years old.
There she is.
And that's my dad behind the camera. He's watching me as I bounce by. That pretty much sums up my childhood. Sweet and surrounded by family. I'm a descendant of the Darawa people from the south of Botany Bay in Sydney, but I grew up in Sydney's northwest.
Happy birthday, dear Brooke. Happy birthday.
And while days
you.
Like these were normal for me,
hooray!
Other 10-year-olds faced a different reality.
Hooray!
You might have seen kids on the news from places like Cairns, Townsville, and Mount Isa, drinking and stealing cars, and landing behind bars as a result.
Yeah, 106 urgent, we had arrest being made.
Most of these kids are Aboriginal, some as young as 10, the same age as me in those videos. But for the nation's leaders, those kids are just another problem to solve. There's been a lot of tough talk about how to fix it.
The public expect tough measures on this particular cohort of young criminals.
People are afraid to hang their washing in their backyard without making sure their house is in lockdown. What sort of society is this?
But there are voices missing in the conversation. The kids behind the crimes. I want to talk to them and ask them, why do you do it? And why do you keep doing it despite knowing where you might end up? And that's why I'm here, on the streets of Mount Isa, a town with Queensland's highest youth crime rate. For many children here, getting in trouble with the law is just part of growing up. This is the first episode in a special three-part series, a collaboration between the ABC's Indigenous Affairs team and Background Briefing. The names of the young people throughout this story have been changed because under Queensland law, we're not allowed to identify anyone who's been in police custody as a juvenile. Mount Isa lies in the dry scrubland of Queensland's northwest, on the lands of the Kalkadoon people who've lived here for tens of thousands of years. On the outskirts, there's a hill where the kids know not to play.
Do you guys ever hang out in these hills?
No.
No.
Why? They're scary, why?
Locals say old spirits live on that hill. Bad spirits.
People used to live on the hills like for like long time, you know, missing.
Like dangerous people?
Yeah.
On a stinking hot morning, in the shadow of that hill, I'm in a car with two Mount Isa teenagers, Jackson and James.
Like all that spirits and things, so.
Right, so there's spirits on the hills.
Yeah.
And can those spirits do bad things?
They can make you sick for like a couple of days. They can make people sick.
So your parents told you not to go on those hills?
Yeah. My dad told me because back home in my country, it's like we got a couple of things like that too. But I don't walk around in my country because I'm too scared. If I touch one thing, I'll get sick.
Jackson's tall, with long hair pulled back into a low bun. He's only 16, but he looks much older. Jackson spent a lot of time in police watch houses and months in juvenile detention, you know, kids' prison. He's been charged more than 40 times for things like stealing cars, breaking and entering, and theft. So what's the problem here? Why did he keep reoffending?
How old were you when you committed your very, very first crime?
Probably when I was like 10. Breaking into shops, stealing cars, and feeling like I was like a mad follower, you know, like what can do this and that.
Jackson tells me about the time he stole his first car and how it seemed dead easy.
I got into the house and if found the door open, walked in and grabbed the key off the bench and went back outside, jumped in, started on, and just went. When my big brother was driving the car, well, I said the driver and I said two fellas and a passenger, and probably like six or seven of us was in at the back of the car. Wow. Like, we was like speeding around and drifting every corners.
But he didn't get away with it for very long.
The next day when I got up from sleep, I found coppers right in front of my face, looking at me, looking down at me, and just grabbed at me and then put me at the back of the paddy wagon and took me straight up to the watch house. I was like 10.
Why is everyone stealing cars and breaking into people's houses?
I don't know, Amos. I think that's when I didn't have a life. Like, nothing around me to do, you know? Like, when you're small, you got nothing to do and you just go follow the wrong boys. Mm-hmm. And the boys tell you to do that.
As time went by, Jackson got used to a life of petty crime. But every time he was caught, he'd end up right back where he started, back on the streets with his mates committing crimes.
Got out from the watch house, went back to the boys, do the same thing all over again. Just want the money, you know, and drugs, miss.
He was always having run-ins with the police. But there's one particular chase he can't forget.
Okay, where are you directing me to?
To the shell shop. That's where I got attacked by the police though.
What sort of dog was it?
I think it was a German Shepherd.
Are you scared of German Shepherds after that?
Yeah. I was on top of this house roof, Nambus.
How old were you when that happened?
I think I was only like 14 or 13. I'm breaking into all the little flats, so the cops just came rushing at us. And that's when we went all skip the fence. I was on top of the roof of Beam Nambus. That's when I spotted another copy standing up. That's when I ran straight across the road. And as soon as I got in the middle of this like traffic light, that's when I looked back. That's when I found the police dog like chasing me, Nambus. Like I saw him like rushing up to me. That's when I ran. I found these like high toilet with roof racks on top. And I tried to run there and try to jump on and lifted myself up.
And from that point on, things got ugly.
That's when the dog just caught me and the leg, like, pulled me back down. And that's when he let it go, up, like, off my foot, miss. And that's when he was, like, trying to go for my face. That's when I was just...
You put your arm up?
Yeah,
you put your arm up to protect your face?
Yep. Oh, I was, like, scared, miss, trying to get away. Got a hole in three places on my arm, miss. And I had, like, surgeries for them.
And when the dog was getting you, what was going through your mind?
I thought he was gonna, like, take half of my leg off.
He shows me the puncture wounds and scar tissue around his wrist, where he says the dog bit him. We asked Queensland Police about dog attacks like this. It told us police dog handlers often have to make split-second decisions. And while they do take the age of the offender into account, they don't always have all the information in the moment. When dogs are deployed, they can bite, but police said first aid or an ambulance is provided by officers and that every incident is recorded and reviewed. Jackson's life became a bit of a broken record. He'd commit a crime, be caught by police, and sometimes he'd be locked up. But on one occasion, instead of jail, he tried something different. Jackson took part in a meeting face-to-face with his victim through a restorative justice initiative.
Did you ever feel bad or upset for the person you were breaking into?
Yeah. Like, when I did confront with that person, she was a lady, and, like, she was, like, crying for their things back, you know, miss. I told her, you know, sorry for doing it. And she made me feel sad too, miss. Like, I wanted to cry, but I'm thinking, nah, it's right. She will be all right.
He says that was the first time he felt true remorse. Do you remember what you took from her?
I took the golden watch with diamond, goes all the way down to a ring. Mm. Yeah. I think that's what said great grandmother's. I think I lost it, Namas, because that was like a long time.
So she never got it back?
No.
Come on, show me what you've got. I'm with Jackson at a basketball court to shoot some hoops.
Go on. Go on. Oh, close.
Other small kids, like every time when they shoot, they always get limbs.
Jackson lives in an Aboriginal community. It's right in the middle of the town suburbs. It's tiny, a single street of about 10 small houses. But it's crowded. There are about 50 people living here. I notice one brightly painted building with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander flags on either side of the facade. It's the nicest building on the street. Other houses look run down. Some families have lived here for generations. Jackson tells me that during the day it's peaceful here, but after dark it can often turn violent.
A lot of people, like, they drink a lot down there and just party, crashing and everything. When they start drinking and when, like, something's little go wrong, you know, miss, and then it'll turn out to be a big thing, then it's happened often.
You said lots of people drink. Were your parents drinkers?
Yeah, they're drinkers. Whenever they want to get charged on, miss, I don't drink, like, every day, miss. Only, like, now and then when I want to.
Jackson and I play ball for a bit. He tells me about all the friends he's made in this community, who are now in jail.
All the boys who I used to hang around with, they're still locked up, miss. My big brother now, like, the fellow who I used to hang around with, he was in jail for, I think, a year.
All the boys here call each other brothers or cousin brothers, even if they're not connected by blood.
My big brothers was all young, and they used to do the same thing as us. Like, was all breaking in, and then when they turned it old, that's when they went to prison and then got out and then stayed out, and that's when they told us not to do them things, but, like, we wasn't listening to them.
One person in Jackson's network has managed to avoid jail, and that's his friend, who we're calling James. Jackson wants me to meet him.
How close are you guys?
Close, yeah, miss. Because, like, we grew up with each other since we was, like, small.
When I first see him, James kinda looks like he walked straight out of an R&B music video. Around his neck is a large silver chain, and his snapback has an American basketball team logo. His three-quarter cargo jeans hang loose around his waist, and his long white socks are pulled up above his ankles. He's a little shy. I ask him how he and Jackson first met.
He's my cousin brother.
So he doesn't live in the same area as you. Are you allowed to go where he lives?
Nah, I can't. You're allowed to.
Why?
I was with them. I was in a gang. I was with them. But they don't like the way I choose the wrong boys to hang out with.
When James talks about a gang, he's just talking about different groups of kids, like, or cliques in the area. Sometimes they commit crimes, but they mostly just act as a second family. Jackson and James belong to different gangs, but they're still mates.
My gangs just don't like them gangs. They like my boys, no, because I got every right to talk for my bloke. He's my brother. We grew up since when we were small in Mount Isa.
So we won't tell anyone then that you two are friends?
Yeah, but I'm just trying to keep it secret from them. Like, they thinking he don't talk to me at work or something, but I try to keep it secret, but we still talking to each other.
They tell me about an area they like to hang out at called Pioneer, known by locals as the Bronx. It's a few suburban blocks, not far from the city centre. This is also one of the areas where police get the most call-outs, mostly domestic violence calls. Family and domestic violence rates are high in this community. And kids like Jackson have a distorted view on what relationships and family life look like. Was there domestic violence in your house when you were growing up?
Yep. Then you stabbed violence when I was younger. All my sisters and brothers, you know, with their partners. These days, you know, I see a lot of my brothers, like, partners, you know, all walking around by themselves while my brothers locked up. Like, all my brothers now, and then used to have their, like, girlfriend, and then used to come. And then used to have a fight. Them, they don't used to fight, like, little fight, you know, they used to have a big fight. They used to try to stab each other. Miss.
Are you worried if you got a girlfriend that would happen?
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I'm thinking, you know, like, don't be bothered for, like, to find a girl, you know, I'll just stick on my own, yeah, miss. Like, I'm thinking, you know, because don't want to end up in prison, you know.
So you think it's best to not have a girlfriend and then you won't have to worry about domestic violence and then go to prison? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
You know that you can have a girlfriend and not be physical with her?
Yeah.
Why do you think that might happen with you?
Well, I don't know, yeah, miss. I think I got a feeling, yeah. This happened to people too, yeah, miss. Like, mainly when all the young people drinking, you know.
As we drive deeper into the Bronx, James warns me not to go wandering around here.
Kids walk around, run amok. It's scary for people like you guys, you know, it's scary for them. A house got burned up here too, miss.
So, wait, kids burn a house here?
Yeah, kids burn everything around here. They burned a couple of houses here. Mm.
And they got burnt by kids?
Yep. Got burned by kids.
Oh, yeah.
What else is the Bronx known for?
Just stolen cars show up every day. Police all around the place here. Jumping the fence over other people's yard. And drug dealers around here. Just all around him, probably them all around.
So is the Bronx a dangerous place at night?
Yeah,
it's a dangerous place at night.
For like enemies too, eh? But if there's a lot of gang there, it won't be safe.
Unlike Jackson, James was never sent to juvenile detention. But by the time he was 18, he'd racked up a long list of offences. He says he's been locked up at a police watch house about a dozen times, mostly for stealing cars. James takes me to a nearby park. It's overgrown and the grass reaches up to our thighs. I can see some monkey bars and an old slippery dip. To James, it's a special place.
I used to come here when I was a kid sitting down here. They made this playground different. They put the shade on top of it just to have a seat over there. It's my second time coming back here again. All of my brothers and sisters when it was small. It's the grab around the corner.
But his happy memories of those years are dampened by run-ins with the police.
I was scared. Like, I was scared too because, sometimes we talk shit to the police. But now they got no mercy for us. They can just hit us anytime.
Have you been hit by police before?
I've never been hit by police, but I saw it. My little cousin brother, like, he fight back with the police.
James tells us this incident happened at the police watch house. When we asked Queensland Police, it told us that people admitted to the watch house are monitored via CCTV and have contact with family and lawyers while they are detained. It also noted that Mount Isa Watch House has multiple systems in place to protect and monitor people in custody, including CCTV, and that any allegations should be reported and investigated. James isn't just scared of the police.
When I see the judge and then get scared how the way they like talk it out and tell me about all my records, I don't want to get locked up. I feel guilty.
James might have been scared of the police and of judges, but that didn't deter him.
Why did you guys steal those cars for?
I don't know. We just had no choice.
You had no choice? Why was that?
We just all got energy just to go in the car and just jumping.
Because it was fun?
Yep.
Yeah?
It was like fun for us, but...
Why did you keep committing crime?
I just had a lot of friends picking me up from home.
James says over time, he tried to find a way to escape that life.
I tried to stop, man. I keep trying and trying, and then I stopped, and I started off doing, like, looking for a job, and then now I'm seeing this happening on news. It's just kids stealing cars from everywhere. Darwin, Mount Isa, Townsville.
James says his turning point happened when he was 17 years old. He decided to take part in a crime diversionary program, but not everyone goes down this path.
Sometimes kids, they just can't help themselves. Crimes never stop for them. They got no supporters, some parents not there for them. That's why they do crime a lot. They feel lost. I feel lost when I was stealing a car, but now, since this program came along, I just keep on doing program all the way. I never stop.
First Nations children are overrepresented in the youth justice system. On any given night, around half of the people aged 10 to 17 in detention facilities across the country are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander. It's a remarkable and sobering statistic, given Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people only make up about 3.2% of the country's total population. These children don't simply choose to be criminals. It's not as simple as that. Family violence, alcohol and drug abuse, overcrowded homes, and a lack of employment opportunities all play a role. Dusk has fallen, and the skyline behind the towering copper smelter is all pale hues of orange and pink. Miners are heading home in their white utes after a long day, and the streets in the town centre are quiet.
Hey, good to see you.
Tonight I'm at Mount Isa Police Station, meeting with Sergeant Amy Sewell.
I've definitely arrested a few young people, but I actually didn't enjoy it at all. I felt like arresting young people wasn't the solution.
Sergeant Amy Sewell got her start as a cop on the beat in Brisbane. When she was sent to Mount Isa, she soon fell in love with the place. Amy's not your typical outback copper. In fact, she's a former rodeo queen. In photos I've seen online, she has luscious, long, golden blonde hair. But when I meet her in person, she's got it all tucked up under a police cap. Amy doesn't carry a gun. She reckons it can come across as intimidating. Tonight, she's meeting up with some kids.
Okay, so where are we driving to right now?
So we're going to head down to Pioneer, which is one of the suburbs in Mount Isa.
AKA the Bronx.
Some people refer to it as the Bronx. A lot of the young people refer to it as that. We try not to use that terminology because it has a negative connotation.
We reached the main street in Pioneer. It's the same street Jackson and James took us down yesterday. We head to a small park, which Amy says is a usual gathering place for kids in the area. And tonight there's a big group of them, playing and riding on bikes.
Hello. What are you doing?
They look like they're about 5 to 12 years old.
Turn the sirens on.
Yeah.
All right, you ready? Anyone want to cover their ears, though? Is it too loud? You ready?
These kids know Amy well and sometimes go to a program she runs called Chillin' in the Park, supported by the local PCYC.
So we drive through a Pioneer and Sunset region, and we pick up our registered young people, and they come flying out of their houses, no shoes.
Just like that, just like how we saw.
Yeah, just come running for the bus, and you know, you check off their names, and they're really excited, and they just love coming in, and God forbid if we actually run out of some space on the bus and have to come back for them. So yeah, no, it's a lovely feeling to know that, you know, the young people respect us and want to be a part of our programs and want to engage positively with us.
As we continue to drive, we come across a group of teenage girls.
I heard you girls have booked in. We're going to do like double sessions. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll do some more skipping?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Bye.
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 Bye. So they're, they attend one of the local high schools here, an alternative ed. So they come and hang out with us at PCYC and do some team building, self-esteem, confidence type stuff. Yeah, great young people and lots of opportunity there to make some change. We get lots of positive feedback from parents, young people themselves, as well as a lot of the school community. When a young person wants to come the second day, you've obviously, you know that you've done something and, you know, they want to keep coming back and participating. The
objective there is I can see Amy's trying to show the kids she's on their side. And by doing that, she's trying to find a circuit breaker and stop kids from reoffending.
Look, these young people are not monsters. They're often disengaged, they're disadvantaged. I think every young person needs, you know, people in their corner, people that they know that they can trust and that are going to fight for them and, you know, be their cheerleader, essentially.
On the way, we drive past James's house. Amy knows him from the days when he was still committing crimes.
Hello, James.
How are you?
Where's my cuddle?
How long have you known Amy for?
For a bit longer now. For 4 years now, we've known each other. Oh.
Yeah, wow. And how have you seen him grow, change over that time?
Well, this young person has grown dramatically over the last couple of years. We've seen him grow into an exceptional young man who has a lot of responsibility now. But yeah, he's obviously changed his ways and choosing a great path.
6 months ago, James became a father. He now lives with his girlfriend and baby boy. He's also holding down a retail job, which he says has kept him on the straight and narrow. What he's been through, the stealing, police run-ins and the lock-ups, he doesn't want that for his son. It's morning, and my producer Kirstie and I have picked up Jackson and James in the car. The boys don't want to be seen together in town, so they're taking us to a fishing spot 20 minutes away, Lake Mundara. It's thriving here, if you don't mind the crocs.
So there are crocs in here. How big are these ones?
Some of them bigger, some of them small. Sometimes you can see them all floating on, like on the side of the thing, on the side of the hill part here.
Do you think that we would be able to see one today?
I reckon if we keep like looking down on the water side, you know, we'll probably like spot one.
Oh, is this too close though?
No, I just gotta feel it. If it's moved.
I mean, for the crocodiles.
It's right. No crocodile don't come out on this side here, only over there.
Hello. Has you got some?
You got something?
Being on country feels special.
It's just like remind us when we were small, like when we come back to each, they come back together, us brothers.
Jackson helps Kirstie to put bait on the hook before he casts his own line in. The only sound is the lapping water. James wanders over. He sits down next to Jackson and lights a cigarette. I ask them about the future. They're still worried they might end up in jail.
Me and him doing a bit good. If I muck up again, I don't want to go to big ass jail late. Yeah, I had like stories. When my brother's telling me he's got like a lot of big lifeies there.
Life is what a life is.
That's the men's what go down for years and years. Murder. And they get buried in the jail too. Yeah. They hang out with them, talk to them. Brothers talk to them. They spend big yarn. But and then when they talk to them, when they're on the outline, they're not like that inside. They're different when they're on the outline. You fuck up, use anything, drugs, whatever.
But when they outland, what's outland?
Outland is mean they outside of the jail. On the outline, kicking back, you know, outside here. Like we in the outline and they in the cage.
The way James sees it, these are his choices. Outland or the cage. Outside jail or inside jail. As the sun begins to set, I realise Jackson and James have barely eaten all day. So Kirsty and I offer to take them to McDonald's, and their eyes light up.
What do you want?
Double McChicken, miss, please.
Yeah. Large?
Yeah, please.
With a Coke?
Fanta.
On the drive home, James barely touches his food. But he takes it with him when I drop him off.
I'll see you then, guys, and see you guys tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good. Bye. See you tomorrow.
Bye.
Jackson hasn't touched his meal either. I later learn that Jackson, James, and other teenagers like them save the food they're given for their younger siblings, nieces, and nephews. As we watch Jackson walk down his street, we see young kids run up to greet him. They're excited. Some of them look just shy of 10, still kids really, but almost old enough to be arrested, just like Jackson was. Next week on this three-part special series, a guard and a former child inmate speak about what happens behind the chain-link fence of a kid's jail.
There's some kids that are in detention that just shouldn't be there. I know of a young person that deliberately breached his bail and handed himself in to police because, you know, he wasn't happy with the amount of drinking that his family were doing, and he thought it was safer for him to be in youth detention. You know, it's sad that he thinks that that's his best option.
Background Briefing sound producers are Lila Schunner and Ingrid Wagner. Sound engineering by Isabella Tropiano. Fact-checking by Ben Sveen. Additional reporting by Kirsty Wellauer and Bridget Anderson. Our supervising producer is Mario Christodoulou. The executive producer is Fanu Falali. And I'm Brooke Fryer. You can subscribe to Background Briefing on the ABC Listen app. Thanks for listening.